Welcome to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel, and I'm joined by MNN's Bill Werner, Brent Palm, and Ashley Walker. We're going to delve into what's happening in the North Star State. If it matters in Minnesota, we've got it covered. This week, a new report indicates fewer people released from Minnesota prisons are becoming homeless. A coalition of Minnesota activists are calling for peace negotiations to stop the war in Ukraine. Telehealth services continue to grow across the state, but first, a report released this week by the Bowman Family Foundation cites some disturbing, but to many health professionals, not surprising statistics on mental health care in the United States. MNN's Bill Werner joins us to take a closer look.
Tasha, first a few bullet points from the new report, which reflect continuing disparities in access and coverage for mental health services. On a national level, 57% of people who sought mental health or substance abuse treatment could not access any care on at least one occasion between January 2019 and April 2022, so from before the pandemic until after it was waning. Nearly 70% of adolescents seeking mental health or substance abuse treatment did not receive any care on at least one occasion during that time period. That compares to only 20% for physical health care. Nearly 40% of those with employer-sponsored health insurance reported using at least one out-of-network mental health provider for outpatient care. That's versus 15% for physical health care. And two out of five people who made an appointment with a new in-network provider had to contact four or more providers before finally getting that appointment. Earlier in July, for the second time in 2 months, state officials fined a major health insurer, this time Medica, earlier it was Health Partners, for alleged violations of the Minnesota law that requires equal coverage or parity for mental health conditions, and officials have agreements with Health Partners and Medica to correct the problem. In Medica's case, the state alleges that company paid providers more for medical procedures than for mental health or substance abuse treatment, was more stringent in reviewing such claims, and did not adequately explain to policyholders about the benefits paid out. Medica is not admitting or denying the allegations, saying they are, quote, committed to ensuring those who need mental health care have access to the providers and services that can best support their needs. Sue Abderholden is with the Minnesota Chamber of the National Alliance on Mental Health, or NAMI. She is a longtime advocate at the Minnesota State Capitol and across Minnesota, and we talked with her to get a better understanding of what is causing these continuing problems with access to mental health care.
There was so much emphasis, and it started, well, probably before this, but certainly with Paul Wellstone and Jim Ramstad, right, on parity of coverage. Is that where the problem is, or is the problem just in terms of the availability of providers, or is it a combination of those, or is it some other factor even beyond that?
I mean, parity certainly plays a role in terms of enforcing it to make sure that we're treating mental health care as any other, you know, health care condition. But the other thing that enters into this is network adequacy. So in Minnesota, for example, you have an adequate network if there's a mental health provider within 30 miles, 30 minutes. Doesn't mean that they are taking new patients, you know, doesn't matter if they have long wait lists. And so we see that many health plans have very narrow networks for mental health providers. So it's somewhat of a parity issue, but it's also a network adequacy issue.
So you're saying part of the problem is that health plans narrow their networks down so much that there are not many choices for patients. Is that it?
That's it. And the fact that when you have just a small handful of providers, they're going to have long waiting lists or they're not taking new patients.
Okay.
And so that's why it was so important to NAMI and the other mental health groups. We did change the law this last session that says you have to look at things like wait times, right, to make sure that that network is big enough.
Understand. And looking at wait times, who do you mean? Do you mean the HMOs or do you mean state regulators in terms of their oversight of HMOs, or just elaborate on that a little bit?
So the health department actually monitors network adequacy, and that would be HMOs and health plans. And so they will be looking at this new law in terms of implementing it. The other piece of the new law is we said that during the next 2 years, because we know we're in a mental health crisis, that health plans have to actually include in their network any provider who wants to be in it. Because we hear from providers who say, I would gladly take XYZ insurance, but they say that they have enough providers in their network. And we know that's just simply not true.
And the same criteria for qualifying providers to provide that service, that doesn't change that, right? It just simply changes
right.
The network admission requirements.
Correct.
Or the network restrictions on network admission.
Yeah.
Let's say that we solve that problem. Do we still have a problem just in terms of that we don't have enough mental health care providers in Minnesota and nationally?
Yes, that is still true. And, you know, I would also look at both in terms of where those providers are. So rural Minnesota is going to have a whole lot less providers, but also the diversity of providers. So almost 90% of our providers in Minnesota are white. And we need to make sure that we have people from, you know, the various diverse communities in Minnesota represented in the mental health field to make sure that, again, we have access to culturally informed and appropriate care as well.
Is it a situation, is the shortage caused by an increase in demand or people leaving the profession or a combination of both? Can you give us a feel for that?
Yeah, Bill, I think it's a combination. So we did see a lot of people retire during the pandemic in the mental health field, you know, along, of course, with, you know, other areas as well. But we're also seeing, for example, psychologists. We're not seeing as many, and we do need more psychologists. We also know that there's barriers in terms of, frankly, money, right? So mental health professionals typically get paid a lot less than, say, dental hygienists. They have to pay for their supervision in order to become licensed. So we really create a lot of barriers that we need to continue to address.
So there are regulatory issues that ought to be looked at on a state level and national level is what you're saying then also.
And funding.
And funding as well, okay.
We want to, you know, you don't usually hear about medical residents paying for their residency, right? And so, but a clinical social worker sometimes has to pay for their supervision in order to become a licensed clinical social worker. And, you know, that can cost a lot of money that someone may not have.
Anything else that you want to add, Sue?
I think the only other thing is that, you know, if people are struggling with accessing a provider through their health plan, they should really, one, contact the health plan to say, I can't find anyone who's taking new patients. But also to really make sure that you let the Department of Commerce know, because they're the ones that look over mental health care issues.
That is Sue Abderholzen with the Minnesota chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Tasha?
Thanks, Bill. More Minnesota Matters after this.
Last night we put on an epic light show.
Yeah, we did.
The crowd loved us. We love the crowd.
Wait, but there were only four people out there.
Yeah, but did you see their four faces? All eight of their eyes lit up brighter than ours. And we're fireflies.
Yeah, we are.
Hey, that one girl, she looked like she'd never seen glow in the dark like this before. And we invented glow in the dark.
Yeah, we invented it.
And we're going to be out here every night rocking out our light show at a forest near you.
Woohoo!
So come check us out.
Check us out.
And bring your kid all ages show. Oh, but don't bring any of those glass jars because they make us kind of nervous.
Yeah, and I'm super claustrophobic.
Whether you're rocking their world or they're rocking yours, some memories never fade. Come alive with the forest. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a forest near you and discover other cool things to do when you go, like fishing, biking, or even camping. Visit discovertheforest.org.
See you later.
Yeah, see you soon.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. A new report indicates that fewer people released from Minnesota prisons are becoming homeless. The head of the state prison system discusses the latest data and their efforts to continue the decline in homelessness with MNN's Brent Palm.
Minnesota Department of Corrections Commissioner Paul Schnell, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
I know you folks are out with what apparently is an annual thing. It's called the 2022 Department of Corrections Homelessness Report. Commissioner, I don't know if everybody knows we do something like this. What does this report do and what did it show?
Well, this is the second year we've released this report. It was required that we do it by the legislature about 2 years ago. So this is the second one we've done. And what it really does is it focuses and targets how well we're doing in terms of the number of people that are being released from Minnesota prisons to homelessness. And obviously, doesn't take much to figure out that releasing someone to homelessness does not speak well for their risk factors. You know, not having a stable place to live and stay really can make a big difference in terms of that transition. So homelessness becomes an important consideration.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's something maybe the average person doesn't really think about. And this one is based on numbers in 2022. And it looks like there's some positive news there. Tell us a little bit about what the latest report found.
Yeah, so we dip below 20% of our population being released to homelessness. People may say, well, you know, that's not a lot. We went from about 25% down to 19%, and that's about 250 or so people that are being released to stable housing environments. And that really becomes important when you think about the fact that, you know, someone's risk of reoffending is oftentimes directly tied to their housing stability. And so what we need to make sure of, and this is one of the things that the legislature and the governor were really focused on, making sure that our housing resources are being targeted, because not only is it good for those people as they leave our correctional system, but it is important to Minnesota's public safety.
Yeah, and I won't even mention what rent costs these days.
Exactly. And, you know, imagine, you know, a person may have been, let's say somebody is, you know, the average person spends about 34 months in prison. If you take our entire population, we release somewhere around 5,000 people a year, each year that go back into the community. And you begin to think about the fact that as these people come back into the community, not only are they tasked with having housing, which is an important thing, and as you mentioned, very costly, but they have to find jobs. They have to make sure that they're doing chemical dependency aftercare, whether that's AA or other types of programs. You know, all of these things have to be factored into that. And that only becomes more challenging when people don't have a stable housing environment.
You said it's about a 6% decline. Commissioner Schnell, do we maybe know why we're seeing some positive results?
Well, I think a couple of things. Well, number one is that the state, our state legislature and the governor's office really have made it priority housing. We saw a historic investment in this last legislative session, including some dollars to the DOC for housing resources to serve this population. And that really is important to Minnesota, I think, generally for all of our population. But if we want these people to be successful and become contributing members of our community, which is certainly the goal of us at the Department of Corrections, then making sure that that transition is proper is important. I think the second thing is, like, why that number drops. You know, the legislature ordered this report because they know, and we've talked to them about the fact that housing is such a core element of successful reintegration. And so the legislature wanted to make sure that both we were focused and they were focused on these numbers and that progress is being made. And that's really, I think, part of it, just attention, just focus on this issue and making sure that resources are being devoted to it is in part what will drive this down. I would just also say that, as you saw in the release, that there were some new resources that came about this last session that the Department of Corrections received, specifically focused on housing and housing services, rent supports, and so forth to help people as they transition. We think that will make a big difference and will help drive those numbers down even more.
Hey, I also read in the release that the DOC has been working more with the Department of Human Services, and they seem to go hand in hand.
When we look at this, and I think one of the things that people in the community expect and want is they want to make sure that government entities and agencies are working together to achieve common goals. And certainly you see that with DHS, Minnesota Housing, the Department of Corrections. So one of the things that the governor really wanted and expected of all of our agencies was that we would work together to create strong collaborations and target our resources, our efforts to achieve these outcomes. So these goals become important, and measuring what's happening becomes important to us, making sure that we're achieving those goals and that we're working together collaboratively to achieve the right kinds of outcomes.
Are we hoping for another step forward in 2023?
We are absolutely committed to that. I'm confident that the work of our staff and putting those additional resources that the legislature provided, we will report next year another drop in terms of the number of people being released to homelessness. And I think all of us, from a public safety standpoint, should be focused on the fact that we want to make sure that we release no one from our prisons to homelessness, because it does not serve our broader public safety interests.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Commissioner. And yeah, we'll definitely bug you, you know, later in the year when we get those numbers.
Well,
yeah,
forward to it.
Hopefully we can continue in the right direction.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
MNN's Brent Palm with Minnesota Department of Corrections Commissioner Paul Schnell. More Minnesota Matters after this. Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. A new study by the State Health Department shows the potential for more accessible health care through telehealth. Here to talk about the preliminary findings is Pamela Mink, Director of Health Services Research with the Minnesota Department of Health.
It's been really a period of dramatic change for telehealth, not just in Minnesota, but in the whole country. And so some of the main things that we've seen is that just the use of telehealth, the volume of telehealth, really surged during, particularly during the period of the pandemic when clinics were limiting their visits, hospitals were limiting their visits. But even once that kind of phase of the pandemic, sort of died down, or we moved into the next phase where things were opening up again, the use of telehealth is still pretty high. And so before the pandemic, like less than 1% of all healthcare services were delivered by telehealth. During the peak of COVID, during the shutdown period, that was about 40% of all healthcare services were delivered by telehealth. And then that went back down again. But even by, spring of 2021, it was still about 13%. So much higher than it was before the pandemic. So not only has the use of telehealth really increased, but the ways that it's been used, the types of care provided through telehealth, all of that has changed. And I think one of the big changes is, sort of your usual place of care, the brick and mortar clinic. Before the pandemic, most of those didn't offer telehealth or offered it in a very limited way. And now it became one of the options. And I think what remains to be seen is kind of what level that will continue. Also, the kinds of care it's been used for, it really during the pandemic and continuing today, it's been used to a much greater degree for delivering mental and behavioral health care services. So I mentioned for care overall, it was 40%, telehealth was 40% of care delivered in April of 2020 and about 13% of in 2021. If you limit that to mental and behavioral health services, it was about 60% of mental and behavioral health care services delivered by telehealth by the middle of 2021. During the peak, it was more 80%, but it's kind of leveled off. And so I think what seems to be a really lasting impact is the use of telehealth to deliver mental and behavioral health care services, as well as, the typical usual brick and mortar clinics still kind of exploring to some extent, but determining kind of what level of service they'll be able to continue to provide.
And, are we seeing an increased use of telehealth in greater Minnesota? I believe if I read part of the report correctly that we really saw an increase in greater Minnesota when it came to mental health services.
I don't know if we looked at it specifically for greater Minnesota versus the whole state. I mean, I think that the access to mental and behavioral health care services was really kind of across the board. With greater Minnesota, definitely, we heard we through Wilder Research, we conducted interviews with Minnesota residents as well as providers and also payers, health insurance companies. And we heard a lot about improved access, and including from people in greater Minnesota. But it's a little tricky to look at the change because prior to the pandemic, there was a lot more telehealth use in greater Minnesota to begin with. And that was related to how services were reimbursed. So, for example, people who are covered by Medicare, before the pandemic, you could only use telehealth if you lived in a rural area. And so that changed during the pandemic. And I think, again, remains to be seen whether they'll continue those sort of pandemic-related policies of making it accessible and available to people all over. So I think telehealth really expanded, but I think it was really a statewide phenomenon and not limited to just greater Minnesota, but certainly felt in greater Minnesota as well as in other parts of the state.
All right. Well, those are some of the key questions I had today. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
I think mostly just kind of a stay tuned to put together this report, we drew on a lot of information from surveys that we conducted, from interviews we conducted, from data, other data sources we had available. We're really, using this next year to do more, take a deeper dive on a lot of these questions. And I would say that this preliminary report focused a lot on how telehealth helped with access to care. I think in our next report, we'll be able to go a little deeper and talk about quality of care and ensuring that or understanding kind of where is telehealth a good option that helps support and improve people's health, and where might be some areas where it's not such a good option.
Thanks again to my guest, Pamela Mink, Director of Health Services Research at the Minnesota Department of Health. Time for our last break. Stay tuned.
Did you know that more lives are lost to lung cancer each year than breast, colorectal, and prostate cancers combined? Lung cancer will claim more than 135,000 lives this year. But new treatments have improved survival for many with the disease and offer new hope for many more. So does lung cancer screening with low-dose chest CT. The American Cancer Society and most major professional organizations recommend that adults ages 55 and older with a long history of smoking, even if they have quit, should talk with their doctor to learn more about lung cancer screening. Lung cancer screening saves lives by detecting lung cancer early when it's more successfully treated. So, ask your doctor if lung cancer screening is right for you. And if you smoke, ask your doctor to help you quit. Visit the National Lung Cancer Roundtable website at nlcrt.org. That's nlcrt.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. A coalition of Minnesota activist groups recently rallied outside Senator Amy Klobuchar's Minneapolis office saying no to NATO, calling for peace negotiations to stop the war in Ukraine. The rally coincided with a NATO summit earlier this month in Lithuania, where world leaders approved plans to put over 30,000 troops on high readiness and confirm new political and military commitments to the war. MNN's Ashley Walker spoke to one of the coalition leaders, Wyatt Miller, on what the mission behind the rally was and what's next for Minnesotans who want the Ukraine war to cease.
The war in Ukraine has been going on for well over a year now. We've had a whole series of protests of the local anti-war movement. This week, NATO is meeting in Lithuania for a summit. They had their first day of that meeting today. And just as we expected, they continue to take actions that anti-war movement perceives as escalatory and prolonging the war in Ukraine and kind of fueling the fire in Ukraine. And we think that there's a better direction, and that is negotiations, not escalations. And so we think it's really important for our anti-war movement to show up in the streets, make our message visible, because by and large, people aren't getting the message of peace from the big mainstream media.
And do you think that negotiations are, instead of more escalation, is going to happen on the second day of the summit, or is it just going to be more put our resources towards the war and continue it?
Yeah, they haven't made any signs that they are going to take any serious steps towards negotiations at this stage. They've already made a lot of signs that they are going to start sending, possibly sending, F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine. That's an action that last year President Biden described as possibly instigating World War III. Now, a year on, apparently that's happening. Hopefully it won't start World War III, but it's certainly not a measure that we would expect to see from a organization that is seeking to end a war.
For your group, your coalition, kind of groups that are meeting today, what is the next step after the protest today to kind of stop NATO's escalation in the Ukraine war and get people to listen?
You know, I think a lot of people in the community have a lot of different ideas and a lot of strong feelings about the war in Ukraine. But now it's been going on long enough. I think more and more people are really starting to see that this war is not going to end in some glorious victory for NATO or for Ukraine or for Russia, for that matter. And so what we see as the next step is really to find more of those people and continue pushing this message that this is a proxy war that the U.S. and NATO is waging against Russia, and it's using Ukraine as its proxy. It's not a war that the U.S. and NATO is waging in the interest of Ukrainians. In fact, it is a war that is destroying Ukraine and is leading to countless deaths of civilians and of Ukrainian and Russian conscripted soldiers. The war is, you know, we see more and more weapon systems are being sent over there, and they come with this promises that, you know, these new weapons, whether that's the F-16s or cluster bombs or what may have you, will be finally, you know, victory on the battlefield. But instead what happens is there are these back and forth, you know, meager territorial gains that are sometimes measured in meters, not kilometers, but meters, and, you know, hundreds, possibly thousands of soldiers are killed along civilians, obviously, for these gains and these territorial back and forth. So we are just going to continue to double down on that message, because I think more and more people are coming around to it, that the war is, this is another endless war that we've seen from the U.S. government and from NATO for decades now, and that it is a massive waste of resources and, of course, a tragic loss of life.
I see that you guys are holding this outside of Senator Amy Klobuchar's Minneapolis office. Can you tell me a little bit more about why that specific location?
Yeah, Senator Klobuchar has been a big booster for sending weapons, building up Ukraine's military specifically as a way to threaten and weaken and provoke conflict with Russia. And she's been doing that for years, dating all the way back to the Euromaidan movement in 2014, which was effectively a kind of a coup where the U.S. and NATO supported far-right forces on the ground in Ukraine that basically instigated a regime change. And Senator Klobuchar was a big supporter of that, despite her liberal credentials domestically. So we think that her office is a relevant place to stage this protest, and it's also highly visible in downtown Minneapolis. And she famously actually traveled to Ukraine, I don't know the year exactly, I think it was 2014, maybe more recently, but she traveled to Ukraine with John McCain and made a lot of escalatory, inflammatory remarks and promises of military involvement there.
So if you could call upon Senator Klobuchar right now and ask her to do something or make a statement, what would you say on behalf of the group?
We would say to stop the weapons transfers to Ukraine, which are fueling the fire and making peace more and more difficult.
MNN's Ashley Walker visiting with Wyatt Miller, an anti-war activist. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Minnesota Matters. Be sure to join us again next week on this MNN affiliate station, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Tasha Radel.